You're listening to Outsources, a KGNU Boulder Denver program that brings you stimulating and thoughtful perspectives on the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer communities. I'm your host, Angela Palermo. Our show tonight is a bit of a whirlwind tour, but all of it, in one fashion or another, centering on the transgender community and how it fits into Out Boulder's Pride celebration, which begins today and runs through Sunday. As I think most listeners are aware, the profile of transgender folks in mainstream media has increased significantly these last few years. Laverne Cox, Janet Mock, and Caitlyn Jenner have become media stars, even if the lives and life chances of ordinary trans people have changed little. This recent rise in transgender media visibility is not without a complex history of its own. Earlier cultural interventions, for instance films like Boys Don't Cry and Trans America, showed mainstream audiences sympathetic portraits of trans folks while giving their protagonists clear and decisive agency, preparing the ground in some ways for today's more consistently positive depictions. And speaking of those earlier trans-themed films, I have with me in the studio none other than Duncan Tucker, writer-director of Trans America, released way back in late 2005. It's not often I get to speak to a well-known film director, so I'm pretty excited. Welcome, Duncan, and thanks for being on Outsources.
Hi, Angela. Nice to be here.
I also have Sarah Connell in the studio with me. She is Out Boulder's transgender programming liaison. Sarah will be telling us about an important trans-focused media campaign Out Boulder's beginning today. She'll also fill us in on Out Boulder's Pride events, which includes a screening of Trans America on Friday evening. Thanks for being here, Sarah.
Of course. And just one quick update. I'm now the Education and Services Manager
at
Out Boulder, which is even better news.
Okay, great. Well,
very happy to be here. Thanks, Angela.
Glad to have you have a new title. That's wonderful. Duncan, I'd like to start with a very basic question. Might you tell our listeners how Trans America came about? Where did the idea to do a film about a transgender woman come from? And what made you want to do this film?
You know, I would say that's the question that I've been asked more frequently over the years during interviews like this and public events than any other. And it seems so natural to me. I've always been interested in outsiders. I feel, as a gay man, like an outsider myself. I grew up feeling like I was outside the box, outside the norm, a bit alone and apart. And thinking of trans women and that community felt a little bit like me, with perhaps the volume notched up a bit. And it feels like a very personal story to me. Where the genesis of the idea came, I can't even tell you. It just sort of, a unicorn whispered it in my ear while I was asleep, I suppose.
Did you engage in research in the lives of trans women before you began writing the script?
Definitely. I had the bare bones idea for what the story would be or might be, and then I was in New York City living there, and I wanted to meet trans women, most particularly stealth trans women. And I spent 3 or 4 months researching. It took quite a while, maybe at least a month or 6 weeks of that, just knocking on doors and trying to network into actually being invited to meet stealth trans women who were transitioning or had transitioned and were living invisibly their lives. This was the character I wanted to write, and these women were so generous and beautiful with their stories, but I didn't begin writing Bree in the story until after I felt really that I dived into the deep end of these lives.
In my mind, I think you assembled a pretty impressive cast of actors for Trans America. Did you find that actors were eager to be in a different sort of film about a character from a generally marginalized group? How did that play out? How did you get Elizabeth Pena and Felicity Huffman and Burt Young and
Graham Greene?
Yeah,
you know, it was great. Actually, the hard parts of the process was first getting any backers interested, because the money people are always the most conservative. And in the end, I couldn't get any backers and had to do, like most indie filmmakers, pay for it myself, maxing out credit cards, mortgaging, borrowing. And the same thing happened again after the film was completed, and we were trying to get distribution executives to come see it at its premiere at Berlin Film Festival. And and they wouldn't even come, despite sellout capacity and standing room only screenings, they wouldn't even come see our movie in this important venue. One of my producers even went to a pretty important guy and said, you've got to come see it. It's a good movie. We're getting great response. And he said, I'm here to do work. I'm not going to come see your tranny movie. They thought it would be some frivolous, campy, throwaway thing. But back to the question, restate.
Can I just ask something really quick? Do you feel like maybe that's the legacy of Rocky Horror Picture Show or of some other like ways that, that trans people have been represented in media before?
I do. I think that John Waters and I mean, not that these movies aren't great, but that's what I think, that they saw the photographs of Felicity as Bree and thought that she looked unusual and were prepared for some kind of campy comedy. And you had asked me about the talent, about the actors, and I was trying to make a differentiation between the money people, like the distribution executives or the financiers, the producers, and the talent. And when it came, once I decided that I was going to make the movie come hell or high water, and we were ready to start offering to actors and find directors of photography and costume designers and so on, everybody that we went to first signed on. I got my first choices up and down. It was amazing. The artists were gung-ho in favor and very, very cool.
So you didn't have to convince Felicity Huffman to play the role?
I just had to convince her that I wasn't an idiot. After she, you know, she didn't know me from Adam, so after she read it and liked the script a lot, we talked on the phone for a while, and she liked that conversation enough to invite me out to L.A. and I to meet with her and talk about it more. So I flew out and I stayed at her house for 2 or 3 days. And by the end of that 2 or 3 days, she felt comfortable. It's very risky for an actor being a non-gender specific word, to take on a role like this or like any role with an unknown director, because however great an actor might be, a bad director can make them look like crap.
Regarding the casting of Felicity Huffman, do you stand by your casting of her, a cisgender woman, as the lead character? Because in the last few years, there's been some controversy in the trans community about that trans characters should be played by trans actors or trans actresses. And how do you see that now standing, you know, 10 years or almost 10 years after the film's release? What's your take on that?
A lot's changed in 10 years. If I were making the movie right now, today, I would have a lot of out trans actors to choose from, to ask to audition. I might even have one in mind before I wrote the movie. Back then, 10 whole years ago, there weren't, to my knowledge, any trans actors, actresses that were out or in anyone that I'd heard of. And we actually searched. I wanted to cast a trans actress, and we just couldn't find anyone for the role. And whether I stand by it or not, from an artistic perspective, I think that Felicity did an amazing job of creating a very real character.
Yeah.
No. Should I talk about the whole man versus woman thing now?
Go ahead.
Because Sarah had brought this up before the show, that I told her that during the writing and pre-production and casting, everybody I talked to, especially this made it hard to raise money, because everybody wanted me to cast a guy, a male in the role, because everybody thought, oh, trans woman, it's a guy in a dress. And I said, no, I've met these women. They don't look like guys in the dress. No matter how good the actor is, you could cast Daniel Day-Lewis. He's going to look like Daniel Day-Lewis in a dress. And that's not what a trans woman looks like, especially after a few years of hormone therapy and other medical interventions they might have chosen. So I wanted to honor where this character was going, not where she'd come from.
And Duncan, I remember when I saw the film in the Denver Film Festival and raised my hand and asked you a question and thanked you for not stereotyping the character of Bree, the main character, the trans woman character, as either a crazed psycho killer or as a sex worker. And with the caveat that it's okay to be a sex worker. But anyway,
I remember that. And yeah, I appreciated that stroke. Thank you, Angela. And I want to say that, like, in a lot of sort of communities that have been invisible, whether it was Black people in earlier days of filmmaking or gay people and now more trans people until recently, there has been this progression where their first portrayed as objects of comedy, ridicule, or villainy. And then they become noble victims, like the black man in To Kill a Mockingbird, who's killed by a society that doesn't understand him unfairly. And even in great, you know, other great movies like Brokeback Mountain, where Jake Gyllenhaal's character is killed by a society that doesn't understand him and can't accept him. And Hilary Swank in Boys Don't Cry is killed by a society. Well, I wanted to make a movie where the trans woman is not a victim, who has a life, goes on, not only survives, prospers, finds family. This is a comedy and also a drama. I don't know. It's a drama comedy. What do you call that?
Dramedy.
What a bad word. But anyway, thank you, Sarah. it's a dramedy. But it's a movie with hope and heart. And I think that at its time anyway was groundbreaking in terms of portrayals of trans people.
It's okay, you don't have to be afraid. There's nothing to worry about, 'cause we got it made.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outsources on KGNU. Today we're talking with Duncan Tucker, writer-director of the film Trans America. And we also have in the studio Sarah Connell, transgender programming liaison with Out Boulder, and also now?
Education and Services Manager.
There you go.
Let it go. Let it go.
So you were talking about the whole man, woman, and trans actors thing. So now that we are 10 years or nearly 10 years further on, how do you feel about Trans America as an artistic production? Are you proud of it? Would you do anything differently?
Well, I would have liked.
So
I'd like to have more money to do. Yeah, I still. I mean, you know, the movie was made for like $1.98, and we were on such a tight schedule, and I look at some scenes that I shot, and I wince because I didn't have time to get coverage. Coverage is where you not only do what's called the master shot, where you have the camera set fairly far back and get all the characters and the whole dialogue for that scene, but you then get to go in and have a close-up of either or both or all three or however many characters, or over-the-shoulder shots, two shots, one shot, and you cut between them and you get to bring the scene more to life. And so many times I just did not have that luxury, and a bit of humor or a bit of character just got lost, unless you look really closely and listen really closely. But on the other hand, I look back at it, and it seems like the movie really survives. I haven't seen it in a lot of years, but I've, because of another project, been looking at bits and pieces of it recently, and some of it really brings a smile to my face. I think the movie is still, I hope, really entertaining and fun and heartwarming.
Yeah, I just watched it a few days ago. I really, really enjoyed it to see it again. So what was it like? Did you go to the Oscar ceremony that year?
Yeah, I did.
Felicity was up for
Dolly Parton was my date. And not only did I go to the Oscar ceremony, it was so sweet. And she like had a pink gown made for I think she probably has all of her clothes made, but she had one made for the performance, the Oscars ceremony, I mean. And she had her dressmaker make a pink handkerchief for me for my tuxedo, which I wore. And
it's like a gay man's dream, isn't it? Dolly Parton's date.
It's really.
It's like, not only did I get to, you may as well go with Dolly Parton.
Exactly. Not only did I get to go to the Oscars, but I was like, because Dolly Parton's so photogenic and people want, you know, they want to cut to her. So we were like fourth row, center aisle, you know, Meryl Streep and Lily Tomlin on one side of me. And I don't know, you name the giant movie stars. I was totally surrounded. It was fun.
Were you worried that they'd like cut to you and catch you picking your nose or something?
I didn't pick my nose the whole night.
Well, speaking of Dolly Parton, I remember when I saw Trans America the first time, which was at the Denver Film Festival back in late 2005. You were there to do a Q&A. You told.
And by the way, I'll be doing a Q&A at that September 10th. Is that the date? Screening.
Friday, September 11th. Yeah. That's 7 p.m. at the E-Town.
It should be fun, so come on down.
Yeah, I remember you telling a story about how you got Dolly Parton to be on the soundtrack. Could you tell that story for our listeners?
Yeah, that was fun. I mean, I love Dolly. It was the movie was finished, and Harvey Weinstein and the Weinstein Company picked it up. And suddenly, you know, from being like a downtown New York starving artist out of nowhere. I had representation, agents and lawyers and managers, and I had a pickup song, which means just one of the other songs that happened to be in the score over the end credits. And I told my agent I really would wanted an original song. And he said, well, what can we do? Who can we get it to? And I said, it should be Dolly Parton. She's such an emblem of self-transformation. They contacted Dolly for me without Harvey or anybody knowing. And she was on tour and she said, I really don't have time. Thanks very much. But then like a week later, I got a FedEx with a song by Dolly Parton, totally full-on produced, backup singers, instrumentation, etc. It was a wonderful song. It was the wrong song for the movie. It just didn't have the right feeling. And I emailed her and said, thanked her profusely and explained why it was the wrong song but and what kind of song I needed. I think I said I need a song that they could sing in a church revival hall or also at a dance hall. And it was about journeying and moving ever onward. And I thought I'd never hear from her again. But there I was in Detroit at a film festival. I was being sent around to film festivals because it's free press for a movie. And I got a call from Dolly's office, and they said she'd written another song. And I said, holy cow, I want to hear it. I'm in Detroit. And there was a beat, and her assistant said, Dolly's in Detroit. And I said, oh my God, I have a screening tonight. I'm in interviews now, but I have between 5 and 6. I could get away. And they said, Dolly's in tech rehearsals and rehearsals all afternoon, but in a performance tonight, but she has between 5 and 6. And so I had the driver drive me downtown to the theater, and he took me back around behind the theater, and there was her lavender pink tour bus. And I'd met a lot of interesting people by then, but that was the first time I was really kind of having my breaking into a flop sweat, because I was like, oh my God, I'm going to meet Dolly Parton. And I went into her bus, and she couldn't have been nicer. You know, she was wearing her casual clothes and her casual hair with chopsticks, and she was plumping my pillows and getting me water. And she had her thing. I don't know how she plays that guitar with those fingernails of hers, but she's like, now don't get mad at me if I don't get it right, because I just wrote the words out, and I haven't practiced it too much. And I'm like, I'm not going to be mad at you, Dolly. And she sang the song, and I immediately loved it. And I was sort of jumping up and down and saying, could you move this part here and move that part there and repeat this part more often and sing this part at the end a cappella and half speed, like a gospel tune? And she's like, I'll give it a whirl. And she was such a great collaborator. Before I knew it, I was invited down to Nashville in a few days to help her put it down so I'd get what I wanted. I'm not making fun of her when I'm just saying. and she was, you know, she was brilliant.
One last question, not to give into sequelitis, but have you ever thought about continuing Bree's story in another film?
I have. Yeah, I mean, she's very dear to my heart. And I have kids now, and that's why I've just become a full-time father for the last many years, like 3 kids. I have these some ideas for films where Bree comes in a cameo role. I won't give it away in case I ever make that film. And we're also, I'm working right now, there's been a lot of interest in bringing Transamerica to the Broadway stage as a musical.
Really?
And yeah. I am right now writing the libretto, the book for it, and
working
with some really super talented and high profile and wonderful people in New York on this.
Oh, great. Wow. So you'd have a chance to recast the whole thing.
Huh. Yeah.
Wow.
Bree sings.
Right. Thanks, Duncan. I really appreciate it.
A pleasure.
And as I mentioned earlier, Outbuilder will be screening Transamerica this Friday evening at 7 p.m. at E-Town Hall, which is 1535 Spruce Street, as part of its Pride Week celebration. The screening will also include a Q&A with Duncan Tucker, who we've just been speaking with, the film's writer and director. All right, well, let's shift gears a little bit. And now it's time to bring in my other guest, Sarah Connell. Sarah is Outbuilder's transgender programming liaison and
education and services manager.
There we go. First, let's begin with the major transgender-focused media campaign that Outbuilder is rolling out today. And I do mean literally rolling out. Can you tell our listeners about that? What does the campaign involve? I heard it has something to do with RTD.
Yeah, it does. Rolling out is exactly the perfect way to say it. So we're doing a series of bus boards that are going to go on the sides of the Hop, the Skip, and the Jump. And these bus boards are our local transgender leaders, transgender activists. Angela will be one of them.
Uh-huh.
Because what we really wanted to do was to show the positive side of being trans, to show that trans folks are multifaceted and complex and are people that have lots of different hobbies and interests and experiences and lives. And a lot of times in the media, transgender people get reduced down to these very simple depictions. You know, they're either a psychotic killer or they're some vindictive person or they're a liar. You know, there are a lot of these like stereotypes and tropes about transgender people in media that have started to be challenged, I think. And it's part of why I've been so happy to talk to Duncan and talk to somebody who has been such a driving force in changing that media picture for trans people. But part of what we wanted to do was present a positive framing and present a way of showing, look, trans people are here, we're in the community, we're members that are just as varied and diverse as anybody else, but we also deserve space in this community and we deserve visibility while also being safe. And so I think that's really kind of the core piece of it, is that this isn't just self-indulgence, it isn't just, you know, aggrandizing or any of it. It's really about solidifying a space for transgender people in public and saying we deserve to exist as we are, as we want to be, and we deserve to be respected for that.
And how many people are participating? Or
we have 6 total.
And is it a mix of different identities?
Yep, it's a mix of lots of different identities. It's a mix of different hobbies, different skills that people have, and a lot of different looks. We really tried to work with our photographer, Heidi Wagner, who's been fantastic, to really bring people to a place in Boulder that they love, a place where that's a place of tranquility, a place of love for them. So we had Morgan, who's the guy on his motorcycle, is just totally rad, in front of this beautiful meadow that he loves to ride by and spend time in. We had Nicole, who is a transgender Latina and is also a preacher. We had her at her lectern, preparing to give what she does every Sunday, because that's valuable to her. And part of what we wanted to show was that multifaceted trans identity.
And do you have any specific goals for the campaign other than what you've been enunciating here?
I think what we want to do is be able to start conversations. We want to offer these as conversation starters. We want to offer it as something that people are going to take a picture of and post online, as something that people are going to stop and think for a minute about transgender people during their day when they may not have had to. You know, I think for me, coming from this position as an activist and an educator, the ultimate privilege that people can have is to not have to think about their privilege, right? Is to not have to think about the ways that they have access that other people don't. And so what we wanted to do is to create that moment for people when they see a transgender person and think, oh God, I didn't think about that today and I would have never thought about that today. But do it in a positively framed way. I think a lot of times when we get those messages, they're only attached to negatives. It's only attached to suicide rates or to murders of transgender women of color, which are certainly very, very important issues,
right? Yes,
for us to talk about and to know about. But it also has this effect of again making that story one-dimensional, or sort of taking it and putting people in this place of pity, of saying, oh, these pitiful trans people, these poor trans people who can never live their lives or be who they want to be. What we wanted to show was the resilience of transgender people and show that trans people are living their lives whether you want them to or not. And transgender people are doing things that make them happy and healthy and comfortable. And there may be an aspect of that that does make other people uncomfortable. But part of the goal of our media campaign is to show that discomfort is meaningful and it's okay. And that really a larger acceptance of transgender people isn't going to come about without people confronting that discomfort that we feel around transgender people sometimes.
How do you see this campaign, this media campaign, fitting in with other trans-oriented advocacy by Out Boulder?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. This is really going to start kind of a really good ramp for us, I think, to continue this conversation in Boulder in a really meaningful way, because in November we have Transgender Day of Remembrance, and last year we did an entire week of events leading up to that, and part of it was focused on transgender people ourselves and kind of educating trans people and doing some of that work. But also, it was about educating the community. It was about offering spaces for people to learn more about trans identities, to learn more about what it means to be a trans person and how you can be supportive of trans people as an ally. And I see that conversation continuing and getting louder, because last year we didn't have a lot of the same visibility stuff we have now. I mean, it's impossible to imagine how much has happened in such a short period of time for the transgender community.
So this campaign is part of the Pride celebration for Out Boulder, is that right?
Yeah, definitely. So they're going to start during Pride Week, which is the 9th through the 13th, and then they're going to run for an entire month. Okay. So the conversation will get started. All of our Pride Week events will be going on while these bus boards are out there, but then they're going to continue to run after Pride as well.
And what are some of the other events? We've talked about the Trans America screening on Friday night. What other events are there?
Yeah, definitely. So that Wednesday is going to be our Facets Youth Talent Show that we do every year in conjunction with Oasis, which is the youth LGBT support group that the county runs. And that's going to be for any youth ages 12 to 25. You can find information on the Facebook event or on outboulder.org/pride2015. about how to sign up for that if you're in that age range and you want to submit an act. You don't have to be in Oasis, and you don't have to disclose a LGBT identity to be a part of the event. You can be a part of the event as an ally as well. And then also for adults, it's really meaningful to have community members in the room for that, because it really shows youth that their voices matter, and that their media is important. So that'll be going on at Shine Restaurant on Pearl Street, and that's that Wednesday. Thursday, we're going to have Allies in Action, which is going to be a museum opening exhibit for the brand new Museum of Boulder, which is going to be right on Broadway and Pine. And we're going to have Clayla Rorick's there, who was the county clerk who signed the first gay marriage licenses in Boulder and in the nation. And we'll have a lot of other historical figures there. We have actually the original 6 marriage licenses that she signed back in 1974 is when it was, I think. Don't quote me on that, but it's on the radio, so whatever. it's now there forever. But we have a lot of other interesting sort of historical pieces of LGBT history in Boulder that are going to be there. Friday, like you said, we're going to have Transamerica. We're screening it at 7, but if you get a VIP ticket, we have a meet and greet at 5:30. So you'll be able to mingle, hang around, talk to Duncan, check out. We're going to have a signed poster from the movie up for auction and a few other items, too. So that's going to be a really great opportunity as well.
Signed by Dolly and Felicity and Kevin and me, but yeah. That's not the important part.
Wow. Great.
I think your signature is important. And then on Saturday at noon, we're going to meet at the Bandshell for a visibility march like we did last year. We had over 100 people there. We hope to have 200 this year. And then Saturday night, we have a big dance party happening at Apex Movement. And then on Sunday, we have the Big Gay 5K run in the morning. And then we're going to have Pride Fest all day starting at 10:30. So we have a whole week of events going on. I'm sure that was way too much, and I hope none of you were writing it down while you were driving. but if you want to check this information later, you can find Out Boulder on Facebook and look through our events there, or you can go to outboulder.org/pride2015 for all that information.
Great. Thanks, Sarah. Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Duncan Tucker, writer-director of the film Trans America, and with Sarah Connell, Out Boulder's transgender programming liaison and
education and services manager.
There we go. We hope lots of our listeners will attend Out Boulder's Pride Week events, including the Trans America screening and Q&A on Friday. Thanks so much to you both for being here.
It was great. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Angela.
Thank you. Be sure to join us next week on Outsources, when Karen Rayforth will be interviewing Angelica Ross, founder and CEO of Trans Tech Social Enterprises, and one of the stars of the upcoming trans-themed web-based TV series, Her Story.